founded in 2003 by Alan Bishop, Hisham Mayat, and Richard Bishop, Sublime Frequencies has become a benchmark in the exploration of popular and folk music from parts of Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. Deliberately avoiding traditional ethnomusicology and academic approaches, they never lose sight of their mission to rescue music and sounds that would otherwise very likely be destined to be forgotten. They work with a highly varied repertoire that ranges from regional radio broadcasts to field recordings, folk compilations, and pop and documentary video and film. Mark Gerges, a regular collaborator with Sublime Frequencies, explains the project's philosophy and the cultural, logistical, and esoteric implications of collecting music from a culture other than one's own.
So I've been working with Sublime Frequencies label since it started in late 2003, and it's offered a great platform to be able to share this music, and it's enabled it to be distributed to a wider audience as well. Because before the label, it was mainly a personal thing. It was something that the collective was doing in their travels, and it's something that we would do if the label didn't exist, but the label has provided this great incentive to keep going. So it was a result of a group of friends who came together and would watch videos, footage that we shot abroad, and music that we brought back, and asking the question, why hasn't this been made available to the West before? We'd all grown up listening to the international music, the world music that had come out from Smithsonian Folkways, from Okora, from these labels. We digested it and learned from it, and there's been some great releases coming from ethnographic research since the recorded medium began. But we noticed a great lack of representation of a lot of the music that we heard when we were traveling. So let's say you want to learn about the music of Indonesia. The first thing that comes to your mind is gamelan music, and then so many kinds of gamelan have been represented. You can buy every record and get to know it very well and even start to learn to play it or study every facet of gamelan music. And then you go to Indonesia and you start hearing music that nobody ever told you about. There's hundreds of styles of rock music from the 50s on. There are Islamic rock, Islamic pop music. There's more secular stuff. There's very sexy dancing and music called dangdut. And you start to wonder, why hasn't this music been focused on? Is it that people don't consider it worthy of export or import? Is it because no one has been paying attention? And why is it being kept away from us? So the label started because we had collected a lot of this music, and we were asking, why hasn't this been presented before? It almost seemed criminal. Some of the greatest music that we were hearing when we were traveling wasn't able to be heard here. Sublime Frequencies is a do-it-yourself operation. I mean, I pay for everything out of pocket. It stems from curiosity of these places and the desire. It's a hobby taken to the extreme, and it's an obsession. It's a passion for this music. I think something like this could only have been born outside of academia. Academia has set up certain ways of presenting music from around the world. They have certain ways of researching this music. They have sometimes large budgets to go and deal with processing this music, archiving it, sending people into the field to record it. A lot of this has yielded some very great work, and there's no question about that. But generally, Sublime Frequencies is this do-it-yourself operation that goes into the field, so to speak. We're just basically, we're tourists that go to these places and travelers, and we're very interested in the music. We don't have rigid method templates that ethnomusicologists may be employing. It's anything goes. I've had talks with major ethnomusicologists who've always let these cultural and academic institutions dictate what they look for and what they export. One ethnomusicologist I talked to said that he, for instance, would never go to a seedy nightclub. That's very dangerous. I would never do it. You hear only garbage music there. But really, that's absurd, because in Indonesia, for instance, that's one of the only places you're going to hear a certain type of music. Same in Syria. You're going to have to go to the casinos and the nightclubs, unless you're invited to a wedding, which, you know, you can't always be invited to a wedding. You're only going to hear certain music if you go to these places that people are saying, I don't know, that's a little bit sketchy. And some of these people really aren't taking those sort of chances. And it's something we enjoy doing. And it's something you have to do if you're really going to explore in depth the music of a certain culture. ¶¶ our systems are so messed up that I don't think I could explain my system, for instance, to an intern and have it be done the right way. All I could say was a kind of a blanket request of just digitize everything, but that would take a lot of time. Also, we have our own aesthetics, so it's really self-contained. So it's from going out into the field, from recording, from researching, recording radio, which we do, talking to people, researching all facets of this music, bringing the music home, cataloging it, archiving it, listening to it, making aesthetic choices and decisions, and then mastering it, designing it, and releasing it. It's all done with our own money and our own budget and our own will, you know, basically. We have not been approached by an academic institution to do this sort of thing, nor have we been financed. Money could help. It could help a lot, actually. I mean, there are many research projects that I dream of doing that would take a grant, and I'm not opposed to applying for a grant. It's just that I usually don't even have time to go into that process. What a process that is. You have to speak that language and sort of, you know, turn it around into this template that's going to be accepted, then they're going to grant you some money. And they may not even agree with some of the politics that we have, for instance, or the methods or whatnot. So it may not even be funded. So it's a gamble. What are you going to do, waste 3 months trying to get this grant that you don't get? And then at the same time that you were waiting for that grant, maybe a few shops have shut down or somebody died in the process. I mean, this stuff has to be documented now, and we don't have the time to wait around for that sort of thing. What makes a Sublime Frequencies release? It's very open-ended, but I always say I think it's an esoteric umbrella concept. It's a small collective, but it's an open collective too, and I think we know what makes a Sublime Frequencies release when we hear it. There's certain music in our collections. For instance, we have thousands and thousands of tapes, records, CDs, and whatnot. When we're making a collection and we're choosing, we have a similar aesthetic throughout the collective, close enough. So Sublime Frequencies doesn't have a specific sound. Obviously, that's absurd because we're dealing with sounds from across the world. But there is a specific filtering process that I would say it goes through. We don't even have to talk about it amongst ourselves because I think we know what it is. But we're always sending each other the mixes and the rough drafts and sort of bouncing off each other, and it all seems to work out somehow in the end. On the Sublime Frequencies releases, the aesthetic isn't set in stone. Depending on whether it's a reissue or if it's a compilation, say if it's a compilation of things that I'm putting together of Cambodian music, I really will try to use Cambodian artwork and try to give it the feel and look of what I've loved about the Cambodian cassettes that I've checked out and brought into the collection. And I don't try to tame it. I try to keep the actual aesthetic of these cassettes. And then, of course, I have to add some context and give it a title and put it in some sort of context that we can sell it. But if it's a reissue, we wouldn't like to tamper with it, really. We'd like to keep it the way it is. If we're working with an artist like Omar Suleiman, a lot of these are collections of his work, but I feature real cassette art because people aren't going to be able to hear these cassettes or find these cassettes. So it's a maintenance of the aesthetic from where it came. The interest in Sublime Frequencies seems to always have been there in the beginning. That was facilitated by Alan Bishop, who was in the legendary group, the Sun City Girls, and had many music connections, and there was already an in with distribution in that way. So I think fans of underground music and experimental music and fans of the Sun City Girls, for instance, were some of the first people to be able to hear Sublime Frequencies because they heard about it through those channels. As a result, some of the same press coverage because of that, some of the people at magazines like The Wire and whatnot in the UK were immediately interested in what the label was doing because here's a project by Alan Bishop and Sun City Girls, and this could be very cool, and people knew that Sun City Girls had connections to travel and that sort of thing, so people were listening. But this press did a lot of good for us, actually, and I think the word got out on the street about the label, and people started paying attention to the different releases. There was also an inundation of releases in the beginning. It was just one after the other. So by the first year of Sublime Frequencies, there were several releases that people could hear, and all of them were pretty fascinating. From there have been many things that have opened more people up to the label, beyond press and word of mouth. Being able to bring Omar Suleiman, the Syrian singer, and Group Douay out on Western tours has really helped. And there's been a lot of interest from, you know, big-time Western artists recently, and more people are paying attention to this kind of music. And I think something turned at that point, too, where I keep saying we were asking the question, why is this music not being made available or being paid attention to in the West? A few years ago, we started noticing many more labels, smaller labels, bigger labels, label divisions starting to focus on this kind of hybrid folk pop music. And you see much more of that now. And there's been a turn. There's kind of the right place, right time for Sublime Frequencies. But then something turned where more and more people on blogs and in their own labels are releasing this sort of music. So it's been really interesting to see the trajectory. Started focusing on a lot of this music, we were marveling at how there weren't any other labels or representation, and we thought to ourselves that this might open doors, that people would start doing this, and that in a few years we would see more Thai compilations from Thailand. And now Thailand is like the new Turkey. By that, Turkey has always been a loved country for their psychedelic movement, for the folk pop there. People have been starting to pay attention to Thailand. I think there were like 10 Thai releases or something in the last year. So suddenly there's this inundation and interest even coming from within Thailand. Always been excited about the idea that more and more labels were focusing on this sort of music. It means we get to hear music too, because we can't do everything. There are other people out there who get on different trajectories. They'll meet different sets of people. They'll discover different kinds of music once they start unearthing CDs and cassettes for themselves. So we've actually had some surprises come to us by other labels releasing music from that we hadn't heard, and maybe in similar genres. A lot of the music that Sublime Frequencies focuses on comes from places that are very easily demonized and constantly demonized by the media and the American government, Europe. So undemonizing and deprogramming is tricky business. And humanizing these places is the first step, and it's not easy. So sometimes I see Sublime Frequencies as serving as deprogrammers, and not the type that are going to try to explain the mathematics of a culture or its music to you, but help you show you the soul of a place without having sold that soul out. So perhaps one of the greatest achievements of the label is the success it's had in bringing this music from other parts of the world to those who may not have had the desire or chance to hear it otherwise.